This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is iFanboy Special Edition Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
I just came to my senses. Yo, I stay in another dimension. Fear is non-existent. Suit up and swing through the city.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Special Edition Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And yes, I did check to make sure that I said that correctly. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hi there.
And our old pal, the internet's Paul Montgomery.
Hello, everyone.
And we're talking about We're talking about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, the sequel to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which came out in 2018, 5 years ago.
Connor, you're emotional because Brooklyn is finally getting its propers. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Spoiler warning for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Suck it up. There'll be spoilers. I do want to say that I had to enact the pose of Rodin's The Thinker to remember what happened in the first one. I remember loving it and thinking it was groundbreaking animation and amazing, but I really had to think hard about what actually happened in it.
It was a lot.
It's been a long 5 years. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, right. Spider-Ham, Noir, Spider-Man, Spider-Gwen, and I was like, but who are they fighting? And it really took me a while, and I only really got the broad strokes in my brain before walking into this.
Remember Big Wide Kingpin?
He looked great.
Yeah. Catherine Hahn accidentally pulled all the people over, and they showed up, but John Mulaney's life hadn't changed up to that point.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I was like, wait, I don't remember a thing about that movie other than I loved it. So that was just a weird thing. Anyway, this was directed by Joaquin Dos Santos and Kemp Powers and Justin K. Thompson and written by Phil Lord, Christopher Miller, and Dave Callahan. Phil Lord and Christopher Miller also produced. All the actors are back. We'll get to the characters and actresses as it comes. But were you guys excited? What were your thoughts walking into this movie?
This felt like a known quantity for me. I was like, this is going to be a quality product. And
Academy
I'm going
Award
to have
winning
a good
follow-up.
Time.
Yeah, the first one won a Best Animated Picture.
The one thing I will say is that going in, I've been a bit fatigued on the multiverse stuff. And it wasn't a surprise that there would be more multiverse stuff in this. But this is a little bit different because it's a Spider-Verse, which is slightly different.
I don't know if you guys noticed that, but Paul just performed an exact representation of the term splitting hairs. I don't know. I just want to give you credit.
Josh and I also reviewed The Flash this week, and I saw these movies within 24 hours of each other, and so I'm going to try not to constantly compare them.
Sure.
But in my head, I was, because I had they were both multiverse movies that I saw within 24 hours of each other. And we talked about this a little bit in The Flash review, Paul, but it's a lot. It feels like everything is the multiverse now.
Yeah.
And it's a consequence, I think, of the fact that there have been so many movies and so many versions of these characters, and they, much like comic book creators, like these people can't help but reference everything. Mm-hmm. And so you're constantly showing everybody from other versions of things. And it's just the way it is. Everyone's embraced it.
I also feel like they're trying to inure the audiences to the idea that there are going to be different versions of these people and characters so that they can keep them evergreen. And so
I wish that we could still have Iron Man in the movies. But
I know,
can't.
But that's what all this multiverse stuff is. Certainly DC did it in that way. And this is, there's like, hey, there's different versions of everybody. So don't ask why there's 8 Spider-Mans because we told you. But who knows? It's still one of those things where it doesn't matter. if it's a stupid concept, if it's done well in the end. Did you have fun? Yes. Great. Whatever. Like when they do a bad multiverse one, then I'll be like, okay, that's enough. But so far, Doctor Strange was sort of my favorite one of those Marvel movies for a bit. And then these movies I think are great. So fair. However, I will say that I think it would have been really fun to spend time in Miles Morales' world with Miles Morales.
Well, that's one of my criticisms.
We wouldn't have done justice to the frantic artistic style, though.
I do want to spend a lot of time talking about the visuals, because there's a lot to discuss there, and it just makes everyone else look uninspired, especially Pixar.
Oh, sure.
I walked out of the movie, and my wife said, well, what'd you think? And I was like, I think that's the most visually impressive film I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, I mean, there's like 100 different styles being used.
The just canon of visuals that all made narrative sense as they were happening. The induction of comic book textures, like, you know, the zip tone and the going out of the lines and the way it all worked. And then I saw the trailer for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. I was like, oh, I see what's happening here.
I remember walking out of that first one being like, holy shit.
Yeah.
What did I just see in terms of the animation? Mm-hmm. And then no one else ran with that ball. And it doesn't mean you have to do it exactly like this movie, but just the idea that, hey, all these movies don't have to look exactly the same, which they mostly do in the CG animation age. They mostly all look like Pixar films. All the Pixar films look the same.
There's a DreamWorks look, yeah.
Yeah, they all have the same sort of plasticky look to their characters.
My kids watch animated cartoons, and they look exactly like all the animated movies, which look exactly like the Pixar movie. All the character models look the same.
Right, so you see this movie, you're like, whoa, there's a whole world of styles out there. Why isn't anyone doing this? And I just think, you know, of the many articles coming out now that are freaking out about Pixar, they're resting on their laurels. All these movies look the same. They all sound the same. They all seem to have the same story. And whereas this movie comes along, it's like, no, you can do anything you want on screen. Mm-hmm. And you're doing the same thing you've been doing for 30 years. Mix it up. Do a different style. Like, find a style right for the story and run with it. Like, I get it's probably cost effective that they don't have to remodel everything and all the stuff is, but like, geez, this movie makes everyone else look lazy.
It's not just that it looks interesting in that way or whatever, but like, it was so frenetic in a good way. I kept thinking, like, this must have required an enormous amount of planning and detail and design. And like, I've never seen most of that. The thing about Spider-Man was always that, like, he's flying around in every direction across New York or wherever he is. And that's hard. Like, if I'm an animator, I don't want to do that. I do for the challenge, but like, as a day-to-day job, like, that must be that sort of 3D all directions plane, and then also playing, then you bring the spot into it.
Yeah.
And you're like, Jesus.
Well, Paul, you and I are members of the Fanboy Brain Trust. Josh is like an honorary member. Mm-hmm. He's made several appearances, but Paul and I are charter members of the Brain Trust. And I think we've discussed on one of our animated review shows that, you know, we obviously love comics, but sometimes animation is the best way to showcase a superhero.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, with Spider-Man, like, it's such a, you know, he, like, the way he traverses the world, the momentum, it's not just the character designs and the animation style. I mean, it's like they do stuff with frame rate.
Yep.
They do stuff with, you know, texture and
sound effects being shown and, editor's boxes. And
you go back to different experimental animation stuff, like, you know, like the original Fantasia, like you can do such cool things. And it's great that something that's, you know, experimental, like, broke out in a big way and audiences really latched onto it. Because I often see that with other trailers for other animated things. A lot of times in the comments, they'll be like, you know, this, like, Spider-Verse was doing this, you know, 5 years ago, whatever. Mm. And it's cool that people are appreciating what they're doing with this, because it's really special and it's monumental work.
I think, as what Josh said, the Turtles trailer for the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie shows exactly that. I mean, I'm not well-versed enough in animation to know the studios and I know Illumination does the Minions, but I don't know the studio, so I don't know if it's the same studio or what, but this is the first time I've seen someone actually take that ball and run with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you think it's related to Lord Miller, and so you think about like how the Lego movies really were sort of groundbreaking in that, and how they did it, that animation that looked, you know, solid. There's other Lego animated stuff and in the video games and stuff, but that one looked different. It had its own, and you think of all the different things that were built, you know, within it, and like, it had all sorts of different worlds. So there's definitely related there. And this is that same ethos. Mm-hmm. but in a completely different style. But it's still like they went for it.
But it serves the story. I mean,
yes. Oh yeah.
Spider-Punk looked like a drawing from a Sex Pistols flyer.
I know what you're saying, but
and he was that way the whole time. Like, it wasn't like, you know, it was like people from different universes had different looks. There was a whole painterly thing whenever Gwen was with her dad.
Yeah, like sort of watercolor effect.
And it took like 3/4 of the way through and I realized it was Shea Whigham. The whole background sort of changed with their mood. It's like they were living inside a mood ring. Like, it was just so interesting. It just served the story so well. Even the standard animation style of like Miles and his family was so beautiful with the zip tone stuff. And I just love the way these movies look.
And then there's like, even, you know, aside from the different styles and the movement, there's just like great composition too. Like the, I love the scene with Miles and Gwen having their heart to heart, like hanging upside down.
Oh yeah.
And then you see the reflection of the skyline and like they're in a special zone that only they can inhabit within this world. Mm-hmm. Only they can be in that two shot or that wide shot. And it's so cool. And there's just constantly stuff going on.
Oh, it felt really long, but not in a bad way, because there were just so much. Oh, really? Yeah, you know what? You're a little right.
I will now switch gears and say, I think this was a better movie than The Flash, but I enjoyed The Flash more.
Okay.
And I think there's some problems with this movie. It definitely wasn't as good as the original one. I think mostly because, like you said earlier, Josh, I think you said it, I wish we had spent more time with Miles and his family and his world. Like, yeah. I get it. That's not the story they're telling. They're telling this giant, crazy multiverse story, but it's like, I really liked his world and his characters and his family, and to spend so much time with like a million Spider-Men, I was just like, I don't really care about a lot of this. And I was really angry. And look, I didn't know this was going to happen, but I also think I shouldn't have need to know. I didn't know it was a two-parter.
I didn't either. That was
it doesn't
Dune
wrap
shit.
Up the story. I think every chapter needs to be a complete tale. Like Empire Strikes Back is a complete story. You can just watch that movie and you can get a story. You can watch The Fellowship of the Ring and get a complete story. This, you don't get a complete story watching this movie. It ends in the middle of an act.
I don't think Fellowship of the Ring is a good comparison because...
Yeah,
I think it's a complete story. You can only watch that movie. You get a satisfying story. It has a three-act structure. This doesn't have a three-act structure. I was very frustrated when it said to be continued. I was like, you got to be kidding me. I just spent 2.5 hours here and you're not going to tell me a full story. You're not going to wrap anything up. You need to give everyone a full story within a trilogy.
I understand what you're saying, and I do not disagree, but I can't say that bothered me.
I'm saying that bothered me. I didn't like that. And then there was something else I didn't like, which I can't think of at the moment. But there was a couple of things I just didn't really like with this movie, although I thought it was a really, really well-made movie. So, like, you know, I didn't love it coming out of it. I liked it quite a bit, but I didn't love it coming out of it like I loved the first one.
To go to a different Lord of the Rings movie, I think it has a bit of the Return of the King thing where it kind of has multiple points where you could have ended it. If you're going to do like cliffhanger stuff, and they sort of felt like they were coming to a crescendo and then it kept going.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Like there are points where, and they're thrilling moments, but I think it was just because of it being a longer movie and there being so much going on.
Oh, that's the thing. We talked about this at the Flash review. About 3/4 of the way through, I started to get antsy in my seat, which tells me like physically I'm sort of feeling the length as opposed to Flash where I didn't feel that at all.
So I did too, but it was only because I was with my kids, so I can't tell you the difference. I'm like, they've got to be like so I didn't know what I would feel on my own. I understand. I don't disagree with you.
Like, again, not bad, but kind of like where I start going, how much time is left?
Also, I saw it 2 weeks ago, so I'm struggling to find, like, it becomes concepts in my head, and the concept I have remember was that it was so thrillingly visual and imaginative, that innovation, that energy, and just execution, it eclipsed any things I may have had about it structurally to a certain extent.
Yeah, the basic stuff is still amazing. Like, he's a great character, the actor who plays him.
Yeah.
Shameik Moore. Is it fair that one person gets to play Miles Morales and Raekwon in Wu-Tang and American Saga, a Hulu original series? Is that fair?
I've one watched has two seasons of that full and rapt attention, by the way.
Yeah. Of course.
Hailee Steinfeld's a great Gwen. Like, you know, Brian Tyree Henry sort of steals the movie always as, you know, his dad. Lauren Velez is great. Like, his whole family unit's terrific. Mm-hmm. Jake Johnson's Peter B. Parker's funny. Jason Schwartzman's Spot was very good.
That whole Spot sequence, I was like, that was
very good.
Like, on its own, like that scene, it was groundbreaking. I mean, it
Spot
was like...
Spot is such a killer concept.
Yes. Yeah.
And... you get the most out of it in animation, I think. I mean, they've certainly done amazing stuff with it in comics, but in animation, just the movement and stuff and just being able to do, the scene in the bodega is what you're talking about, yeah. That sort of like when you get the reveal of what Spot is. And then to take him from being like a comedy pratfall character to being something really scary, like when he, becomes like Dark Spot or whatever. And like, there's some like spooky anime, like Akira, Neon Genesis Evangelion stuff with the way he's rendered. It's really neat what they accomplished.
Yeah, there. I mean, I remember thinking in that first scene, I was like, I don't know how you beat this guy, except for he was silly, and right. and therefore not all that threatening,
within control of his own abilities.
Right.
But when you master those abilities,
right, and then there was the change. Unbeatable. I was like, well, that's not good.
Yeah,
and it was almost like at the end, I was like, okay, yeah, they don't have time to beat them. They can't beat this guy, because what they did do was really establish the threat of that thing. Because I was like, they can't beat. I don't know how they're going to get there. And they were like, we'll try it in the next movie. And I was like, fair enough.
I will say that that's maybe an issue in this, is that you've got Spot and then he disappears for a bit, which is fine.
And then it becomes
to Miguel. But then you also have the reveal at the end of yet another threat.
Right.
And so there's like a lot of enemies vying for attention.
It felt almost like the classic conundrum where the first movie is what it is. It's a great little like small film. And then the next movie, they throw too many villains in, they throw too many things in. It's like, what happened with Batman Returns. It happened with Spider-Man. And, by the time you get to the third one, there's just too many characters. Like, it felt like there was too much going on. And also, as an old school Miguel O'Hara fan who loved those comics, I was kind of annoyed they made him the crazy.
You're annoyed that he was the bad. And I think if you're a fan of that, or if you're a fan of Ben Reilly, you might feel a little bit.
I love Ben Reilly in the movie.
That was so funny. And afterwards, I explained it to Lindsay. I was like, so here's why that's funny. And they leaned into it. They never let it go. So I was like, that's fantastic.
Andy Samberg. I thought it was very funny. I was really hoping for more comic references in the Spider-Verse, because there's been a lot of spider characters, and I was hoping to see like a classic Jessica Drew. I was hoping to see that other Spider Woman who wore the black and white costume. I was hoping to see the classic black and white costume.
You see her.
Who?
The black and white Spider Woman.
Did you see the black and white Spider Woman?
I think it's a riff on that costume, but you definitely see a black and white
costume.
I was
really hoping to see like the classic black 80s Spider-Man costume.
There's
a lot
of thick Spider-Men.
Yes.
That was sort of like one of their ways of differentiating like other like sort of their generic like background spider people who weren't specific references.
You get a thick Spider-Man.
Yeah. There was a cowboy Spider-Man.
That was a good one too. I liked it and it was fun, but like I was just hoping for a little bit more stuff from the comics, because there's a lot of stuff to pull from. But
Spider-Man India, very visually cool.
Like, he was cool.
Just the way he moves. And
he was really cool. And the Mumbai-atten, what was it?
Mumbatan
was really visually awesome, and that whole segment was great, and how they tied it into Gwen's dad was awesome. Like, I thought that part was awesome, that whole sequence.
The economy of how they, like, I like the structure of it, where they do the introduction to each of the, starting with Gwen and saying, okay, we never showed you like the actual origin for Gwen, and so let's start there. So it actually takes you a little while to even get to Miles.
Someone complained behind me about that. They were like, is this a fucking Miles Morales movie? Because it was like 20 minute intro with Gwen Stacy.
It's Gwen. She's great.
Because it went a long time. It was like,
sure,
it was a long time. I liked it, but it was a long time.
That costume is such a good design.
It is.
Yeah. The whole time I just kept thinking, I was like, that is an amazing design.
The only thing is that the hood is not great for peripheral vision, but that's such a nitpicky thing. It's one of my favorite like modern costume designs. Yeah. It's so cool. The colors are great.
Yeah. Yeah.
When we were in the Spider-Verse, whatever that headquarters, and we saw Donald Glover, I was like, oh, we're doing this. We're bringing live action into this. And so we had Donald Glover be there as the Prowler.
We'd seen live action previous to that in the movie.
Did we in the first one?
No. In this one, we saw live action.
He went to the Venom universe.
Right.
And saw the lady Spot from the Venom movie. Yeah.
And we also got the like sort of the Lego stop motion stuff.
Yeah, that was by that kid. The kid did that.
So they've done like mixed media.
Yeah, what I mean is like, oh, we're doing like Spider-Verse. Like, we're doing everything. We're doing live action. When we see Andrew Garfield, we see Tobey Maguire.
I really like this. I think that's so fun. Like, because like, where else can you do that?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just felt like it was a lot. It was a lot. It was a kitchen sink movie.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see it again, because like I know it's the cliche. There's so many things that I'm sure I missed, and I think it would benefit repeat viewing.
Yeah. Again, I didn't hate it. I thought it was a very well-made movie.
It sounds like you hate it.
Like, if the first one was, well, we'll get to the ratings at the end. I'm just saying there were things I was like, there's a lot going on. I don't know what I'm supposed to be holding on to here. But then, you know, great stretches of the film were incredibly well done and exciting. And Miles' story is still amazing.
I think it's just about going along with it. Like in this case, it's a fire hose and you just, like in many instances, that's a weakness. But I think in this, it's the strength and it's the aesthetic of it. It's just constant.
Is it just nonstop?
Yeah, and in a way that kind of works with Spider-Man's thing, because no matter what happens,
he's got to keep pushing.
The Spider-Man in all the comics, like, he should never make it home. Like, 100 things happen on his way to anywhere. That's how I always think of Spider-Man. And so for them to sort of do that cinematically, you're never going to get that resolution. You're never going to be like, you don't get the chance to catch your breath from ideas, from action, from visuals. And like having that be what's in my mind, then I'm cool with it. I don't think that criticism is unfounded. It totally is. But also, you know, I don't know. I have a different expectations for it.
I think the music helps because it gets you into that like flow mm-hmm. state with it. Cause it's just such a beautifully curated soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. Although I felt like they tried to recreate the first film had that iconic song from Post Malone, and mm-hmm. there's that scene where he's in bed with his headphones on. I think that they're trying to go for that feeling again, but that song wasn't working. Like they never had that song that song was like everywhere after that mm-hmm. movie. And it really sort of identified itself as the Spider-Man song. Whereas I thought it just didn't work this time. It felt like it was a conscious effort to recreate that moment from the first film when he's walking through the streets with the headphones on.
I mean, yeah, sure. Like in the moment I was like, sure, that's what they're going for here. But I don't think it was as strong as in the first one, but it didn't have that novelty. But I don't know. I'm with Josh. I was along for the ride and it worked for me.
Well,
let's see. Who haven't we talked about? We had Genki. He was in the first. Was he in the first film?
He is in the first one. He didn't have a speaking role.
Yeah. He was playing a Spider-Man video game.
It was funny because I was reading about the film and it's like in the return of his best friend Genki, and I was like, are they really friends? It was like in the first one, he's just sort of like there.
Really excited to see a brief cameo twice by the Spectacular Spider-Man of the amazing cartoon that's called the Spectacular Spider-Man.
They had the MTV Spider-Man.
I loved that Spectacular Spider-Man. He even got mm-hmm. a line in the movie, which I was like, oh, yes. they went for it. They had the 60s Spider-Man from the old 60s cartoon. Like, I appreciate that aspect of going for it. I was even okay with the super meme scene where they all do the pointing.
Mm-hmm.
I had missed that because I had to go to the bathroom and I came. And when later Lindsay was like, there was this, that's the meme. And she's like, what? And I was like, oh, it's all like, you know, when you explain
all of them.
Nerdy shit.
I mean, like, awesome. I'm impressed by these movies. I think they're incredibly imaginative and thoughtful and well done.
The Dune buggy
made an appearance.
Yeah.
I'm overloaded. Who was the villain at the end, Paul? It started with Spot and then it was Miguel O'Hara.
Ask me. No, you're not going to.
Well, Paul said it.
No, it's fair.
You said who was the revealed villain at the end? I forgot already.
Prowler.
That's right. That's right.
But it's Miles as Prowler, and I'm not sure that who's playing it. It's a different voice actor.
In the last run, Saladin Ahmed's run, there was a big part of it was he goes to a different universe, and the villain in that is Miles or Salim, I think, because it's like backwards Miles. Either way, like he's his own worst enemy.
Jarell Jerome is the voice of Miles G. Morales, who exists in that. I thought that was neat, a neat twist. That was something that I wasn't expecting. Like, and then when they do the cool bit where Gwen is outside the window of Miles's room, but it's in a different reality than the one that Miles is in.
They pull the switcheroo on us.
They do. When you realize it's happening, you're like, oh, that's always cool when, you know, you have that moment
really
where
cool.
They sort of like, you know, tip their hat to it and you get the reveal at just the right moment before the movie does. So you get to feel clever. But and then as it happens, like, oh, that's neat. They pulled that off. That was really neat. They really sort of were building up to that moment where he's tied up to the speed bag and his uncle turns it and like, if you've seen one of these before, any kind of multiverse thing or alternate reality thing, for you know that alternate Miles is going to come into this world because we haven't seen him yet.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes in and, oh my God, he's the Prowler in this universe. And that's such a cool twist. Of course, it's going to be a different Miles. Okay, so here's something we haven't talked about yet. I think it's cool that in this state of things, with all these movies of multiverses and stuff being explored everywhere, I think these movies have like a thematic purpose for the multiverse. Like, they're telling interesting stories that aren't just about multiverses. It's about something else. It's about something bigger than that.
It's not just, hey, look, another version of Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's about like belonging and this idea that Miles was a mistake. Like this idea that Miles was never supposed to be Spider-Man. He is the original, like, do they call him an anomaly? They don't call him a variant. They call him an anomaly.
Good.
Thank God.
So he's the one who sort of like caused all of these, you know, glitches in the Spider-Verse. And I thought that was a really cool idea. The idea, it's kind of complicated, but we've been through enough of these before that they trust the audience to understand it, that, okay, the spider that turned him into Spider-Man was from another reality that was supposed to bite a Peter Parker there. But instead, it bit him in this reality. And so I just think there are so many stories that it's just like, oh, we'll get to do all these different versions and sell action figures, you know, of different iterations of these characters. But there's actually a reason to explore this stuff.
It was also an examination of loneliness. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
Miles is alone. You know, all of his friends in the first film went back to their home dimensions. He has Genki and his family, but, you know, the original Peter Parker has Mary Jane and Gwen Stacy and Betty Brant and Harry and Flash. And like, he has a whole support system of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And Miles is essentially a loner, but not by choice. He's upset about it and sad, and he just misses his buddies. He misses Gwen. He's in love with her. But, you know, he's constantly drawing his spider friends in his notebook, but he doesn't have them in his life. And his desperate need for friends and connection is what leads into a lot of problems in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't show any kind of qualify or vet these people. Like, as soon as somebody shows up, he's like ready to be their buddy.
Right.
That's very age appropriate in the world where.
And I'm just saying that leads to trouble for him because they're not all his buddy. There are some of them want him dead.
And then to feel betrayed by your friends because you find out that, oh, they knew all along the secret about you.
Right. And he was desperate to join the spider team, whatever they were called. Spider Man,
Diamond Dogs,
Multiverse, the Diamond Dogs.
When they say it's a very select, you know, squad, and then to find out that this whole reality, this whole universe,
there's thousands of them,
some really weird also rans get to be Spider Man and get to be part of this.
You really felt for him. I think the voice performance is just so strong for Miles. He really feels alive and real.
Oh, 100%. And also, what's kind of cool is that, I mean, it's an adult doing it, but I thought that he was drawn a little older and he sounded a little older.
Well, he's a couple years older than the
I know, but they played it really well because it's a subtle difference.
Right.
And it went
Gwen
14
notices.
To 17.
She's like, oh, you really grew, you know.
Well, yeah, she noticed.
Yeah.
I just love Brian Tyree Henry's dad. He's such a dork. And he loves Miles so much. He's just one of those great movie dads.
Yeah. And in these stories,
he's a hero in his own right.
One of the issues with multiverse stories is sometimes it can feel like there aren't stakes because there are different versions of characters. And if one dies, you can always get one from another reality. But here it's like, you know, threaten harm to Miles' dad. Like, no, like, that guy is great. I want him to be happy and I'm excited for him to be captain. And
right.
You know.
Just to remind me, because it was so long ago. The Peter Parker in Miles' universe was like blonde, right? And it was like...
Is Chris Pine. Yes.
Yeah.
And so this isn't like the 616 universe. This is some other universe. 616 isn't even the regular one. I think that's just the comics. It's very confusing.
I forget.
Stop.
They list what his reality is called, but 1610, no.
Oh, God.
No, that's wrong. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page.
That was
just too much.
Gaiman.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Anyways.
Oh, boy. So when is the next one coming out? Is it next year?
Next year. They worked on them at the same time, so...
I do think it could have been tightened up. I do think there was probably some tightening that could have happened. But I like the quiet moments and all that stuff. It's all worthwhile. I just felt a little antsy.
I think if there weren't great moments like the bit with... Like, yeah, there are moments like with him and Gwen, the upside down stuff, and then like the bit with his mom talking to him. No, but it doesn't feel like it got short shrift to me. Like, character is still there. But I can see Miles gets a bit overcrowded.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Compared with the first one. So I can see that.
I need to rewatch it. I thought I owned it on Blu-ray, but I guess I don't. Or someone stole it.
Who would steal your Blu-ray?
I've lent it out a lot of Blu-rays. I have several friends who borrow them a lot.
That's not really stealing.
Who's?
Well, they never returned it.
Yeah, but
it's theft.
Possession is 9/10 of the law, Connor.
Who's lending out discs, physical media, these days?
I am.
Connor's holding tight to a world that is dying underneath.
Are you
him.
Kidding? Are you seeing how these streaming services are treating their content? I'm holding on to these discs.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
I had someone borrow all of my superhero movies, like during the pandemic.
That sounds like a handcart situation.
It's like, are you sure? Anyway, I thought I had it. I was going to watch it beforehand, but I didn't have it, so I didn't watch it. Anyway, listen, I had some problems with it, more than I expected. But at the end of the day, I was like, whoa, that was incredible in terms of production and writing and performance. So I'm not knocking it as a bad movie, not at all. It just really puts into relief, and I don't see a lot of theatrical animation anymore, but I see enough.
Hmm.
It really makes the other.
You mean like in the theater? Or
in the theaters. Okay. I don't tend to even watch them on streaming. I watched a couple of the Pixar ones in lockdown, but I haven't really liked a Pixar movie since Inside Out. And that was a long time ago. And I don't have any interest. I'm just not the target audience for these Minions movies and things like that. And
you got to watch
Minions is great.
Kraken or whatever. I'm the target audience. But it really does throw into relief how unimaginative these other studios are in the way that they can present their stories, because they
Dog
all
Days
look
on Disney
same.
Plus. You got to watch them.
They all look
well,
the
I think,
same.
I think that a lot of times, a lot of those other animated things, the animation is just a vehicle to be able to tell the story.
Mm.
It's not really an expression of the medium like this is. This is an expression of comic books as sure. transferred to a visual medium.
And I understand, you know.
World. No, what I'm saying is like they don't even bother thinking about it a lot of times. So Pixar says now they make a couple of good designs and they go, well, can you understand this character just by looking at them? Because that's their thing. They want you to know this is the mean guy, this is the sad guy, this is the whatever. And then we're going to tell you the story. And the story is going to be that not everybody is what you're going to expect them to be. And if you give them a chance, they just might surprise you. And in the beginning, someone's going to die. That's all of them, folks.
And I understand that the original hand-drawn Disney movies had a house style that all looked pretty much the sure. same. And I get that. I'm not unaware of history. But after so many animated houses ran towards Pixar's corner, making almost all the movies look vaguely the same, with that same sort of plasticky character look.
Mm. It feels like it's selling toys or, you know.
Yeah, to see a movie like this, it's just like, oh, man, there's so much more animation could be doing. I know there's other things, Miyazaki and things, but like, you know, talk about big mainstream American releases. Like, it just, there's so much more that could be done if only there was someone with the courage to break out like these guys were. And they won an Oscar for it.
Just imagine if, like, John Adams went through a portal and, like.
Where's this going?
Was taken into a theater. Like, this would kill him. Like, he just, like, but not. But he'd, like, not in a bad way. It would just be like,
also probably some of our germs would kill him too, but yeah.
I want that on a poster.
This so would bad. Kill John Adams.
Imagine, if you will, exposing a time-traveling John Adams to this, period. It would just kill him, period. Paul Montgomery,
I fanboy. Get that on a poster.
I'd sign
Sony
that.
Sony PR team.
Next to him, Ben Franklin is just like gripping the seat really hard, and he's just
Ben's into fucking into it. Like he's it's difficult, it. But he's like he's chuckling. He's
there's a little foam at the corners of his mouth, but like come on, yeah. But no, it's but someone yeah, it really does
like,
push
take that fur hat off.
It's Beaver.
It pushes the medium.
It's very expensive.
Miguel O'Hara alone, he's a ninja vampire Spider-Man of Irish and Mexican descent.
I know we're wrapping up a little bit, but we didn't really talk about him much. Oscar Isaac was great voice-wise, but I felt like, like I said earlier, I was a big Miguel O'Hara fan in the 90s when the comic was out, Spider-Man 2099, written by Peter David, drawn by Rick Leonardi. To make him the bad guy, it's like, oh man, it's kind of like when the Mission Impossible and Peter Hunt was the bad guy. I felt like we just didn't get anything from him. Why was he so angry? Why was he after Pete? Like, he had no motivation. I don't understand the character.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like there, because there was so much going on, there was no time to explain why he was.
He's a little more arch than the other characters who are developed better.
Yes.
Like you understand the motivations of the other characters, whereas he's the guy who they need to be. Like,
I mean,
for
I get
plot
it.
His, purposes,
his,
they
his
need him to be.
His family had died.
Angry. Yeah.
But it wasn't really a motivation for why he was doing what he was doing.
I do give them a bit of credit for not like trying to like gaslight you into thinking that he's a good, like from go, you know, that he's turned bad. Like, you know, that he's
yeah.
bad news.
This is not okay.
you don't, like, they don't try to, you know, hoodwink you into thinking that he's noble. He's just, you know.
Yeah.
This isn't our first spider rodeo.
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to the final part of the trilogy. This movie's doing incredibly well. It's already made more money than the first film did in its whole run.
I'm annoyed that it hasn't made more money than the Mario movie, which, whatever.
It's not going to.
Yeah, I know.
That wasn't bad. That's from the people who brought you Minions.
Josh should just work for Illumination. He loves them so much.
Actually, I thought the last two Minions movies were kind of disappointing, but at the heart of it, that's just a way to make dumb jokes that I like. So
let's do ratings on Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Okay.
Ratings.
You want to go first?
If the first film's a 5, this is a 4.
Okay.
Out of 5.
I'm going to go, do I give this tilt to make up for?
No, you give your real-time current
and a 4 out of 5 is not a bad rating. I just want everyone clear to everyone listening at home who are going to come at me
for inflation, you know, like, what's your call right now? What's the value today?
I'm going to give it a 4.7 because peer pressure. Connor is tainted.
Oh, I got 4.75.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I'm fully there. I loved it.
Yeah.
You're not wrong about whatever you said, but it doesn't matter because bringing that spirit.
I love that. You're not wrong about whatever you said.
No. I just mean like I'm not disagreeing with your criticisms of it. I think they're completely valid. But at the end of the day, you know, that love of the art form that speaks to me as a great lover of comic book art, the history of comic book art, and then adds something to it in addition to just aping it. And taking the best of it. It's the same thing. A lot of things like this, when comic books are translated, I go, wow, other people must like this, but there's no way they can like this like I do. Or like people like me. You know what I mean? Like, if you are a longtime comic book reader, either of the stories and the characters, or just the art form as a thing, like, this is going to speak to you. And it did to me. And I thought, wow, what a special thing that this exists now. And people are always like, can you believe there's a Doctor Strange movie? Like, yes, I can. But can you believe that there's a movie that pays homage to this great art form that so few people know about and appreciate? And I think that that is worth a lot.
Connor, I want to ask you this. Okay.
Yep.
If the first one didn't exist, okay.
Yep.
You've just signed the Declaration of Independence.
Uh-oh.
Okay, and then it opens up into a portal, and suddenly you're in a Regal Cinema.
Yep.
He's be at Kips Bay.
And you see just this movie.
Actually, Paul, wherever you saw it is actually the closest.
It's the Highway Theater in Jenkintown. Now imagine, you were able to survive.
Have I breathed any COVID in?
Of course you did.
Do you think the popcorn would have killed him just right off?
Yeah, exactly.
I've never tasted anything this flavorful.
Well, I think the first thing that happens is I take a sip of soda and I go, whoa!
Yeah, and all your teeth, whatever's... Well, the fact is your teeth are riddled with decay. So right. The second that liquid sugar hits them, you scream in terror.
Someone hands me a bottle of water and I go, I can just drink this?
Yeah.
Do you know how to use a straw? Like, if you're... Like, you look at the cups in your hand and like, do you know what to do with that?
Is it? It's a Sour Patch Kid. Good luck.
Sir, this hurts, but it's delicious. I'm not rating this in comparison to the first one. Like, it's not a curve. It's, I thought the first one, I liked the smaller story aspect of it.
It's leaner,
It's leaner. It's more personal. This, I had more problems with, and it was a little overwhelming. And I probably knocked a half a point off because it was a to be continued in the middle of an act, and it didn't give me a satisfying conclusion.
What I've been saying in the lead up to this movie is I wish that it could be smaller than the first one, and it's bigger. Like, I wish, like you said, I wish we could just have like a Miles in his world Spider-Man story told with the same, you know, economy and the same like cleverness and like moment to moment brilliance.
You just can't, though. Like, they can't make movies like that. You can't make a smaller movie than the first one if the first was successful. You can maybe do it on the third one.
In the old days, here's some more old man talk, sequels made less than the original.
Mm.
That's just what happened. It was diminished returns.
Mm.
But now it's expected the opposite. The movie always has to make more than the last. It's now the sickness of capitalism in the box office expectations.
Can I make one suggestion, a request, really, is that I would like to keep up this... How many and how quickly our founding fathers killed by the sensory explosion of seeing whatever the product is? And what I want is, and I'm just going to go ahead and lay this out there. Do research. I mean, like, find out who you know, the guy from the House of Bursars was, Burgers, in Virginia, and be like, oh, yeah, no, it got him.
He has spider phobia. So
now, when I say John Adams, are you picturing Mr. Feeney from 1776, the musical, or are you picturing Paul Giamatti?
Paul Giamatti, 100%.
Okay, yeah.
I kind of picture a real John Adams because he had such an interesting and unique face with the little skinny nose and
pinchy.
Yeah, he had a pinched face.
Yeah.
Unpleasant man. Brilliant, but unpleasant.
Fun trivia fact. Yeah. Wedding Night stayed in the Abigail Adams suite. And there is a large, austere portrait of her staring directly at the bed. She was a descendant pretty much of Puritans. And I mean, a stunning woman, amazing woman, you know, would have been a president
judgmental.
In her own right. But yeah, I felt a lot of that. I was like, can you want to cover that up? Cover that up for me?
Before we go, Josh, can you give us your 2-minute review of Transformers, Rise of the Beast Wars, whatever the fuck it was?
It was not a good movie, but it was a great movie. Also,
you like the brand synergy?
I've heard about at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I did very much like that. Because okay. At this point, like,
I don't want to ruin it for people, but yeah.
All of the rules of like, is this okay? And I was like, fuck it. Because 80s commercialism, Transformers, it brooks no artistic concessions. It is only about commerce. Also, I must say, literally the best popular music soundtrack I've heard in a movie forever. And I loved Guardians
Stop
of the Galaxy
it.
For that.
Stop. No.
Oh my God. It was an early to mid 90s hip hop soundtrack. I knew every word that came up. Lindsay would look over me and I'm singing along to Black Sheep. She's like, stop it.
Oh man.
engine number 9 on the New York Transit.
Josh is having a movie renaissance right now. He's just loving everything.
Well, it was 3 long years.
Transformers, Flash.
Transformers wasn't good. And the worst part was that, like, my mom was with us, and I was like, I guess you're going to have to go with us. She didn't even go see movies with me when I was a kid. So the whole time I'm thinking, she is just miserable over there. And she, I'm not going to lie, went a little John Adams. She's like, I got to get out of this room.
She all took right, a sip of soda and was like, oh my God.
But compared to like Transformers 1 and Transformers 2.
Transformers 2, ooh.
Those were garbage movies.
I still maintain Transformers 1's really fun.
You couldn't see it.
I haven't seen this one. I'm excited that it looks, at least some of the trailers, that the robots look more identifiable as individual creatures, not just random silver and robots. But I haven't seen it yet. I liked the first one. I thought it was silly and fun in that early 2000s Michael Bay way, but they got really bad really quickly.
Yeah, but that's the exception of the Mark Wahlberg King Arthur one, which, fuck yeah.
Let me leave you this. Okay, you're John Adams. You're on a stretcher. They're taking you out from across the Spider-Verse, down the hall, coming out of Transformers on a stretcher, Jefferson, and you're like, daggers at him.
What did we rot?
What happened was is that what really happened was that he went on a massive shopping spree prior to that and overspent, even, you know, by you know, inflation standards. It was a big problem. And then what happened was you wheel that motherfucker into a THX theater or whatever, and you're like, this is Oppenheimer. Good luck.
Oh, my God. Just when they do the THX logo thing in IMAX.
That's enough.
They're dead.
That kills the Delaware delegation right away.
I know we have to wrap up, but is anyone going to see Indiana Jones next week?
Yes, I am.
I don't know about next week, but I'll probably see it.
Well, it comes out next week, but is anyone planning on seeing it? I already have tickets.
Of course you do.
It was literally a impulse. Like, I wasn't planning on it. I actually wasn't planning on it, but it was an impulse. I just did it because it was Indiana Jones, and I was like, I guess I have to do this, and did it.
Listen, the Highway Theater after this, after Spider-Man, they're doing Asteroid City. I got to go see that.
That's my next. I think I'm seeing it this weekend. By the time this comes out, I might have seen that.
The Jason Schwartzman June.
There's a lot of movies this summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
What a season.
Well, one last question. Is anybody going to see the Turtles movie?
Yes.
They look great.
It looks awesome.
It does look really good.
I'm so excited for that movie.
I saw it and I was like, wow, that's speaking to me.
Like, wait, they're actually teenagers. That's such a novel idea. It's like the 10th iteration of Turtles.
It's the first time. It threw me off in the beginning. I was like, why are they children? Oh my God, they're teenagers. Oh my God. Yeah, it was weird.
But Splinter.
It was correct. All right. Well, we'll be back. We reviewed The Flash this week. I don't know what order the shows are coming out, but they both are out soon. The next film review is probably Blue Beetle.
Gosh.
Oh, actually, I'm sorry. I have plans. Josh, we haven't scheduled yet. Weird enough, though, I do have plans.
It looks like a direct-to-streamer movie. I don't know if that was going to happen.
Hey, look, it's Iron Man. Blue.
I think.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll figure it out. In the meantime, Josh and I will talk about the week's comics over at iFanboy.com. We'll also have our other shows. Paul and I have an animation brain trust show coming up relatively soon, Justice League War World. Mm-hmm. And then we also have our Media Explode show every month. We talk about non-comics media. We have our monthly either Booksplode or Talksplode. Booksplodes where we review a trade paperback. Talksplodes where Josh talks to a comic book creator. We have all kinds of shows, tons of shows over at fanboy.com. You can check them out there. And thank you, Paul, for joining us. That was super fun.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
Josh is me. Weezy Carter, I'm about to go Peter Parker. I'm Spider-Man. If he ain't me, he's just a creepy crawler. Touch spot the lighter. Pull up in a new Ferrari Spider. Spider web necklace with the diamonds. You turn the spider woman if a biter. I will not go back and forth with you. I see you got the black widow with you. You should have had a black hero with you. I get an arachnophobia. I've been lit since I flicked the lighter. Since I was an instant business spider. They been trying to wash the spider out. I got spiders crawling out your mouth. Spider-Verse. I just came to